Mr. Manis, I've been noticing this thing here. What is this, a crash helmet? Oh, I hope not.
Hey, I'm caught.
He's the United States officer who has been sent into outer space. I'm referring to the chief astronaut with the United States Interplanetary Expeditionary Force, and here he is now. How do you do, sir? May we have your name?
My name, Jose Manas.
You're the chief astronaut with the United States Interplanetary Expeditionary Force?
I am the chief astronaut. With the United States Interplanetary. My name, Jose Manas.
Mr. Jimenez, could you tell us a little about your spacesuit?
It's very uncomfortable.
How much did the spacesuit cost?
That spacesuit cost $18,000.
$18,000?
Yeah.
That seems rather expensive.
Well, it has 2 pairs of pants. Well, that's only $9,000.
Yeah. I've been noticing this, Mr. Menes. What is this called? A crash helmet?
Oh, I hope not.
What are the physical qualities that they look for in an astronaut?
The physical quality they look for in the astronaut. You got to have the perfect hearing. You got to have the perfect vision. You got to have the normal blood pressure. You got to have 4 legs.
You have to have 4 legs?
Yes, they were going to send a dog, but they thought that would be too cruel.
Mr. Jimenez, you must have some opinions on the race for space.
All right, I will. I got one.
What do you think of Vanguard 1 and Jupiter 2?
That was a pretty close game. I thought for sure that Vanguard was going to take it.
It was close, yes.
But you were reading the papers about it.
I know. Now tell me, Jose.
I'll tell you, Jose.
Tell me.
Yes, I'll tell you. You just ask me and I tell you.
All right. Were you a participant at any of the rocket launchings at Cape Canaveral?
I was a participant at any of the rocket launchings at Cape Canaveral. I was there when they opened the door into the nose cone. They took that mouth and they put that mouth inside the nose cone. Then they closed the door on that little mouth. I don't want to talk about it.
Hold on, please, let's try to continue here. I want to ask you, what is the most important thing in rocket travel?
To me, the most important thing in the rocket travel is the blast off.
The blast off.
I always take a blast before I take off. Otherwise, I wouldn't get in that thing.
Well, after that, what is the procedure in taking off?
The procedure after that in taking off, mm-hmm. You got to put on the step-up hydraulic double dynamo reversible booster. You got to activate the decompression activator. And you got to put on the anti-magnetic gauzing system.
And then you're really up there.
No, that opens the door. And lets out that little mouth.
We've had a big winding, and we're christening in the new tape recorder. We've had the best Christmas ever, and I know we're going to have a happy new year and many more wingdings. Mummy just came in and wants to hear what my voice sounds like. She just finished doing the dishes. Now I'll play it over.
Emmy Liney was on the line the other day serving oatmeal. And one veteran come through. He says, "Have you any oatmeal today?" "No, we haven't any oatmeal, but we've got rolled oats."
"Hello, this is Henry Hassenfeld for Pumpernickel Drive in Clayton's Garage." Stop.
"This is about my father trying to find the stove poker. He was looking for it all day long. He hunted up and down, and he blasted us out for hiding it on him. Says, 'You're always hiding the stove poker. I can't find it anywhere.' So as he went upstairs to go to bed one night, he went upstairs, and when he started to come down, the stove poker was on the stairs. He stepped on the stove poker, it rolled over, and he went thumpity-thump down the stairs, crash, up against the door. He says, there's that gall-darn stove poker. Oh, he says, 'Oh, my back. Oh, I think I broke my back.' So my mother upstairs, we was all in bed, she says, get up, I think your father's broke his back.' So we all took to laughing and left him laying there, and it was about 15 minutes before we get down to get him up. So he didn't break his back, he was all right."
I just thought I'd tell you about something that happened the other day on the bus to work. We don't have trolleys anymore, just buses, and everybody's crabbing because the buses don't hold as many people and there's no bars to take hold of. Anyway, it used to be you just step down on the door treadle and the door will open, but now the new buses, they aren't that way. You have to push on the door, there's a bar, and you have to push, and as the bus driver said the other day, you push and you sort of fall out. Anyway, people can't seem to read the sign and decide that they have to push the door, and they step down hard, and they keep jumping around, and the door doesn't push open. So the other morning, we were riding to work, and there was a woman up front, and she was reading some Bible or book, and she was praying, and oh, mercy, and all this stuff. She was really cutting it up, and I don't know what she was doing, but oh, we were in terrible times. Then later, she tried to get off the bus, and she stepped down. First, everybody else got off, and then she decided she wanted to get off. So she says, "I want to get off." So the bus driver stops and flicks the green light on, ready for her to push the door up. Well, she doesn't figure that out. She wants to start pushing. She says, "The door won't open." And so everyone says, "Push the door." And she says, well, now you take so much time, I'm not going to bother. If I can't get out when I want to, I'm not going to. So she rode on to the next stop.
A startling sensation of a simple Simon sailing simply and serenely over the heads of a startled and sunstruck assembly. Toy boat. A big black bug bit a big black bear. A big black bug bit a big black bear. A big black bug bit a big black bear. A three-quarter cornicut handshift cut in a three-quarter cornicut style. Hey, fellow, tell a fellow, why fellow, get a fellow, have a fellow, build a fellow's barn.
Far away from you, and I'll go.
Oh, you're singing about the chow chow. How you like the chow chow. Now you got it, you won't eat it. Oh, this butter's a cold, or those young'uns out there chipping it off and chipping it off in a thousand little pieces. Arnold, you come in here and tell me you too. Oh, Lord, I come home after working hard all day. Those young'uns out there digging a great big hole right in the yard, right in the lawn, right in the ground. Oh, you young'uns want to do is eat and run and get up and run and go to the back house and stop. Oh, I don't know what we're going to do with you. All you young ones around here, you won't, you waste more than your neck's worth. Oh, dummy, here, can't you see how little slit goes right in that little slot right there, see? Now I have the cart in the afternoon, and you have it this afternoon. Well, you've got a letter. See, you've got a letter here. Did it come in an envelope? Well, I'm going to town now, Laura, and I won't be back till I get here. Who ate that piece of cake you left at? Oh, you're telling about the peen pot. Ruth, where did you put that peen pot? Oh, I put it out in the putry. The putry? I couldn't find it out in the putry. What'd you do with the spider then? The spider? Put that underneath the sink.
One time, ma'am was frying pancakes on the stove there. One Sunday morning, she was frying them. In my land, she looked and cracked. A great big pot come right down through the ceiling. Plaster all over the floor and everything. Oh, here, what's going on here, Laura? There was plaster all in the pancakes. We had to throw them out. They weren't fit to eat. Well, there we go. The time the car walked up.
Oh, Lord, you almost put me on this long, peaked knife. How do you expect me to butter my bread with this big, long, peaked knife? Anything more long and peaked in your nose, Willie? I'd like to know what it is. Oh, Laura, it's 15-20 below zero this morning here. You put this cold butter on here. Look at those young ones out there just wasting it, wasting it, wasting more than next word. They're waiting the gravy on their bread and the butter too besides. We'll all be the poorhouse. Oh, Laura, here I come home here from work after slaving all day. Look at those young ones out there, this cold weather. 10 above zero and their little BBDs on. Yeah, one day Tubby was in town and it was awful cold and Billy McGee was in there and we had those all those little pigs out there in that house, all of those pigs to take care of. And Tubby says to Billy McGee, we got those pigs and we haven't got many potatoes and what are we going to do with them? And Billy McGee says, well, just give them the little ones there, Arnold. Give them the little teeny ones. You can go up and crawl up on top of the bin there and pick out some little ones, just the little teeny ones there. So Arnold, he walked down the street about a half a mile or so, and he heard someone hollering and looked back over his shoulder, and there was Billy McGee holding his hand up. Just the little ones, Arnold, just the little ones. Just give them the little ones. Yeah, one day last fall, we was out there picking potatoes out to Jerome Darlin's out in Limestone Road there. We was out there hauling the potatoes there. We was picking, and all of a sudden, the digger broke down right behind the horse there. And the fellow was down there, and he was hitching and pounding and thumping away at the digger, trying to get it on catch there. And the horse's tail kept swishing him right in the face and swishing him right in the face. And he told this funny fellow there, this simple-minded fellow, he said, here, you hold this horse's tail while I try to hammer this rock out of this here digger, he says. Told the fellow that he hung back on this tail there, the horse's tail, and he held it hard. The fellow, he went away up the house. I'm going to go up the house, get a piece of bolt, put in this here hitch, he says. And now I'm going up there. So he went way up the house about a mile, and he came back down again here. It was just funny for leaning right back on that horse's tail for all he was worth, still holding on that horse's tail. He said, the fellow says, what are you hanging on that horse's tail all this time for? I've been gone in a couple hours, he says. Oh, dear, Laura. Yeah, this was one day up in Rooster County. We lived down there on the Puddle Dog Road, and down by Foggy Joe. And ma'am, she invited this old codger to come down, this old hermit to come down for Thanksgiving dinner. And he brought him in the house there, and he don't look like he'd ever had a bath for at least 25 years. And Pap says, would you like to comb your hair, mister?
You know, I don't prep up very much, he says. And after dinner, the old father there, he couldn't eat very much. Ma'am offered him another piece of cake. And he says, no, I guess I won't eat that now, but I'll take it home with me. And he takes it and puts the frosting on, puts it right in his pocket, he does. He takes a piece of cake home with him.
Carol, what happened to your hair?
Oh, it blew.
Looks like it's been through the ringer 20 times and landed in the swamp.
Ah, here comes Randy!
When we was down Sebago Beach last year, we was laying on the beach.
Larry and I.
Oh, hello.
That was a girl next to us laying there. We were sunning ourselves. And finally, there was a few started down the beach with their boat.
There was a great big fat guy pushing on one side. He thought he was doing the greatest of jobs. Come find out he was shoving right sideways, doing more harm than he was good.
Look at their feet sinking down the sand. Where'd he get that old boat anyway? Looks like it come over in the Mayflower.
Well, they got her out in the water, got into it. Yeah.
Look at it leak.
That thing leaked. And then he starts trying to start that little egg beater.
Mm-hmm. You ought to have that old boat at the zoo or something.
Yeah, that thing's small enough to take a bath in.
Look at that old motor smoke. Look at him crank on it. He wouldn't even start it.
Hey, why don't you go sink that thing to the bottom of the lake?
Yeah, then they take it back up, hook it on the board, and starts right off.
Then they take her back to the boat again. Tried for dear life for about a half hour more. Took her back again to the stand and...
give her one crank and off she went. Oh, they ought to have that, take that thing and throw it in the lake and leave it there.
You know who that is?
No, who?
That's my father.
That were Uncle Clarence sneaking a drink of chocolate milk.
That time was down to Sebago there, with a fella come crashing down through there in the middle of the night.
He
almost killed us all.
Well, we was down Sebago, sitting there enjoying ourselves under the old canvas we had. It's nothing but an old thing. It had holes in it, and just tied here and tied there, and we had strings going here. We had one long one that went way out quite a ways. We were sitting there looking up through, and turn our head, and you look up, and there's a hole, and you see the moon. We looked like a couple of gypsies there. Sitting there enjoying herself. Fire was going good. And pretty soon we were sitting there talking, and Larry was sitting in his little chair. He had fixed all up, pretty proud of it, you know, and I was sitting in my chair. Pretty soon we talked along there, and we heard this bicycle coming down through, the boy humming, going along, and all at once, crash!
Did I break anything?
No. You don't know. Did the tent come down? Yeah, it came down. It don't make any difference. We're going to move out tomorrow. And I'll save us tearing down. And all the crash, Larry's chair goes down and he falls on the ground. Smashes his chair all up. My brother come up from Massachusetts to visit me one time. And he's quite a fellow to drink. We was all sitting here watching TV and everything was going on. And he was sitting there enjoying himself and laughing. And there was a show on of elephants and lions and everything. So when it came to the part where the elephant was doing tricks, why, Clarence was watching it there and having a great time. And one of the elephants, he got him down, roll over. So when he laid down, he rolled over and the big legs went in the air. He looked up and he looked at, boom, does that look just like Doris coming out of, getting out of bed and walked out.
I'll say the path.
And at the same time, a mother-in-law came over, and she came upstairs, and the lady, she was an elderly lady, around 65, 67, and he was drinking away there and almost falling down, knocking the furniture over and everything, toppling all over the place. And my mother-in-law started to go home, get down over the steps, walking along smoothly and very gently, and everything was going nice, and he staggers out and gets her by the arm and says, "Now, Mrs. Scott, can I help you down over these stairs?"
"Looks like I ought to help you down the stairs."
"Okay. Oh, Carol, I love that new hat you've got."
"Oh, why, thank you. I like it, too."
"Where'd you get it?"
"Oh, in Shinofsky's, and it fits so smooth.
It's such a bright yellow. I love it."
"Hmm. Looks like a grapefruit."
One Christmas quite a few years ago when Pap was living, and Sally was just little, she's about
2 years old. We took her down to see Santa Claus. Pap kept talking about he wanted to take her to see Santa Claus, and I thought she'd be kind of scared myself, but Pat carried her in through all the crowd and lifted her up over everybody's head and got her into Santa Claus' lap. And she was kind of scared. She sat there awful cute and then about started to cry. And Santa Claus said, "What do you want for Christmas, little girl?" "I want the party." Boy, he give her back to Pat quick.
Carol, how do you like my brownies?
Well, I hit a soft spot.
Yeah, must have been a knot.
Oh, that's a nice looking clock you got there, Bertie. How long you had that?
Oh, I've had that clock a little 5 years. That's one of the best clocks that I ever had. Oh. Down to the Bertie here and bought that. I don't know, you were around $8 for that.
What's the name? What's the name of it?
Well, that name there, I don't know. You'll look here and see what the name is.
What's clock? I heard that for your clock. It's in a different stock. Is that a different stock?
No, this clock never stopped since I had it, boy. I got a good one when I got this one.
And about 8 years, you say, hasn't stopped yet.
Yeah,
and boy, I'll ask you to give me one of those, I guess.
Yes, you will.
Yes, sir, clock.
Now, what's the matter with this thing?
What time is it?
What time is it there, Bertie?
Guys, holy cats. Does this thing stop?
Look at that. See, I've been going the last 2 hours.
Yeah, well, that's what it is to drag it in.
Yeah.
If I ever get another clock, I'll never brag it out or anything else. Every time you brag something out, then what that do? It's gone.
I'm going to take out the outflow of the tub pot. I think it's not worth it.
Okay. El señor Blanco, maestro de la clase de español, no estudia las lecciones. Habla español bien, no habla mucho inglés en la clase de español. Explica la lección a la clase en inglés.
I like Spanish, and I can understand some of it.
Just a bunch of Greek to me.
Say hi to all the kids down there for me.
I will.
Yeah.
Tell them I'd like to meet them sometime.
Whenever I say Carol and Loretta, they all know who I'm talking about.
Well, tell them I'd like to meet them sometime.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah. Well, I'll see you in June anyway. Before that, we hope. Bye.
Camping out. Camping out at Sebago Lake State Park is the best way to spend the summer vacation. To go there, one is willing to endure the agony of setting up camp, sleeping on saggy, squeaking cots, and hearing someone go through the process of brushing their teeth outside the tent when you're trying to get to sleep. Then there's the fellow in the next campsite who has had a nightmare and who wakes up screaming, almost jarring you off your cot. During the day, campers head for the beach clad in the gayest of bathing suits. With them, they take sunglasses, wide-brimmed beach hats, radios, and some kind of miracle tanning solution with high hopes of turning into a dark brown Indian overnight. If someone tells you you're beginning to look like a lobster, you call him a killjoy and keep right on baking. When you begin to feel, yourself, that you're quite well done, then you reluctantly go back to camp and find out that you're a little bit overdone. While camping, there's never a dull moment. If all at once there should come a tremendous boom and a piece of meat is seen flying into the air above the trees, don't be surprised. It's only someone's pressure cooker blowing up. On waking in the morning, you may see a man running by in his pajamas, shouting and waving. He's probably trying to catch the milk truck that went by before he could get his tent unzipped. The best part of camping out is a campfire at night, when Uncle gets out his guitar and Dad his harmonica and they start playing Yankee Doodle, campers come from everywhere to join the fun. Of course, the evening wouldn't be complete without the bottom falling out of someone's camp chair. If you go camping with the idea of getting a rest, you'll find you leave more tired than when you came, but much happier. Even if the tent caves in on you, it's of little importance. You're camping out. All the way to the top. As I walked in the door, a feeling of fear gripped me. All at once, I didn't want to go to the top. I had a fear of elevators, but then I knew I would go up. Taking a deep breath, I headed for the marble hallway lined with elevators. I walked reluctantly to a door where everyone else seemed to be waiting. My hands grew cold and clammy. I had just about decided to back out when the enormous door opened and swallowed us up. I looked around, dreading the moment when the elevator would start to ascend. I was nervous, but tried not to show it. I hated elevators. Standing there, braced against the side, I began to feel a ringing and bubbling in my ears. Jumping little red lights on the door caught my attention, and to my horror, I discovered I was already going up. 82, 83, 84, 85. The elevator jerked to a stop while I seemed to keep on rising. My stomach felt sick as I stepped dizzily out. We changed elevators and went straight to the top, the 102nd floor. This time I was prepared for the sudden stop, though I couldn't escape the dizzy feeling. A strong breeze hit me when I stepped out of the elevator, and I felt better. I wormed my way through the crowd to the balcony outside with a mounting excitement inside of me. Every building in New York flashed its lights before me, the gigantic red letters of the RCA building, the Chrysler building, and the two rival stores of Macy's and Gimbel's. As I circled the balcony, I could see Times Square, the dazzling core of the city. Long Island in the background stretched out like an arm dividing Long Island Sound from the Atlantic. As far as I could see, New York spread out around me, and still there seemed to be no end to it. I don't know how long I stood there looking on, down on the miniature buildings, but I began to realize how big New York really is. With one last sigh, I managed to tear myself away from the sight and back to the elevator. I don't remember the ride down. I was in such a daze. After floating out of the elevator, I came to an abrupt stop. I had actually been to the top of the Empire State Building. This is a tape of Our Christmas, 1961. This is Carol signing off. Merry Christmas.
Larry, Merry Christmas.
Daddy, Merry Christmas.
This is Merry Christmas from Ruth, one of the merriest Christmases we ever had, 1961.
Yay!